Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast have blown up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Monday, January 2nd, 2023. Welcome to episode 600 of the podcast and episode 1 of the new year. Happy New Year to all of you out there. Hope it was an incredible New Year's Eve, an incredible New Year's Day. We got a very fun day of football to talk about here. Some wild playoff scenarios playing out right before our eyes. Joining us to do all of that is the Prop King himself. That is an actual real royal title that I must begrudgingly bestow to the great Andy Barnes. Andy, what's going on, buddy? How was your new year?
Yeah, that's gonna be my next tattoo, I think. It was a good New Year's. We're here in Florida with the extended family. We did like a murder mystery game on New Year's Eve. I was not the killer, but I was a suspected killer. It was really fun. It was really fun. Turns out I like that sort of thing.
Yeah, that sounds fun. That sounds pretty great. Not the killer, but you are the 2022 prop king. I mean that. For the uninitiated out there, I put up a tweet about, I guess I probably could have explained this more because, I assume that everybody that follows us on Twitter is just aware of every single piece of content that we consume, but or that we produce. Yeah, Andy wins the prop challenge on Fantasy Football Live and said on air while he's wearing his homemade, Prop King shirt with his face in some absurd little position there. That he's going to be mailing one to Tank and I. So the next day I get a package. My wife is leaving the house to go to an appointment or something. And she goes, "Oh, you have a package from Andrew Barron." So I was like, "No, no, I'm not. No." So brought it inside, filmed a little video, put it on Twitter. But anyways, Andy, I did open it and I will be wearing the.
It's such a comfortable shirt, right?
It looks very comfortable. So I will at some point find some sort of social outing to wear your face all across town too. But congratulations to you on the Prop King stuff, I guess.
Yeah, that was a blast. It was a bit much sending Tank a onesie for the newborn. That might have been a little overreach. I was just, my exuberance over winning this contest was so great. This is only the second time that I've won one of these Fantasy Football Live contests. I've been on the show for like, a dozen years or something. So feels like I probably should have taken home one or two more. But, I don't let opportunities to celebrate go by the wayside.
Yeah, as you said on Twitter, you should by no means allow Andy Barnes to win some small field fantasy football based.
The less relevant the contest, the less impressive the win, the more I'm going to gloat about it. So, yeah, you should definitely, if you get in like a six person or three person contest with me, do not let me win.
Nah, you can't let Andy win that. But we did let Andy win that, and we have to now deal with that for a full, off season, which is a nightmare. But anyways, I'll find something to wear the shirt to, and which would just be, actually, I kind of hate that stuff because as much as it's a funny shirt and it looks very comfortable, I don't like a lot of questions directed my way, and then I have to talk to people who I don't know. It actually sounds like kind of a nightmare, but I guess that's the nightmare that I've earned.
And then you have to tell them how you lost to this goofball in a deeply involved, complicated contest. Yeah, it's basically a laundry day shirt. It's a really comfortable laundry day shirt.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm shaking in my boots right now thinking about having to explain all of the things to all of the people. Anyway, we've explained this scenario quite enough. We do have quite a lot of games to get to here, and starting with 49ers 37, Raiders 34, an overtime victory in the backup quarterback bowl, Andy. Oddly enough, I kind of want to start with the losing team here. There's a lot to say about the 49ers. There's a lot of victory laps to take if you're a Brandon Ayuk guy like myself, but let's start with Jarrett Stidham. I mean, he was pretty impressive, way more impressive in this game than I possibly ever could have imagined, Andy.
Yeah, pretty much a best case scenario for Stidham. Really fun game overall. Not a clean game, right? It was close, but it wasn't exactly flawless. But the stars all showed up, And this is as much as anyone could have possibly expected from Stidham. And even the, you know, even the late interception, what, like, he had a dude getting thrown into him, right? It wasn't entirely on him. Took full advantage of the best receiver in football, right? That was good to see. We weren't veering away from Devontae Adams in this one. They kind of built the offense around their best players, which was awesome. When they do that, they can put up a big number, right? Because Josh Jacobs is great and Adams is great. And they took shots. Like, it was really fun to see. I didn't think we'd get that from Stidham. I thought not only was San Francisco the obvious number one fantasy defense this week, but you know, if I could have ranked them higher than one, I would have. And the Raiders really showed up. Like, the Raiders were great. They moved the ball. It was like a start your studs victory here, right? Like, if you had faith in Devontae Adams' ability to overcome any matchup and Josh Jacobs' ability to overcome any matchup, you're feeling pretty good. Like, the guys that got you here actually came through against perhaps the league's best defense.
I know. Yeah, it is a huge victory for the start your studs truthers. A couple of things here. Yeah, Jared Stidham, second among all quarterbacks in yards per completion, behind only Deshaun Watson. That was the thing. Like, okay, if you want to imagine a scenario where Jared Stidham comes in here and, like, okay, he executes a couple safe throws, like Devontae Adams is getting open quickly. They've got some little cute screens or play action stuff like that because they have a good run game. I could have seen that. What I didn't expect was him coming in there and doing two things. Slinging it down the field, like I said, and playing really well on the move. Like, that was the thing about Stidham too. I didn't know a lot about Jared Stidham, period, other than he was a guy that had gotten pulled from games where he was placed in there because the Patriots were blowing a team out, and then they saw Jared Stidham and they're like, never mind, let's put Tom back in there. Okay, that's about the only thing I knew about Jared Stidham really coming into this game. So certainly colored the way I talked about Jared Stidham coming into this game, but made a lot of plays on the move, which I didn't really know was in his bag. And to me, again, I don't know that. Let me just say, I don't think Jared Stidham is like the future of the Raiders quarterback situation. I think that's a pretty obvious. However, I do think what it reminded us is that obviously Carr is not going to be the quarterback next year. That relationship has now been severed. They're going to go in another direction. But whoever does take over as the Raiders starting quarterback next year, this is a pretty good little incubator to be placed into because of Devontae Adams. Darren Waller's contract situation is a little interesting. They could potentially move on from him, but he's still a matchup nightmare. This offense is set up for a quarterback to succeed. That guy was not Derek Carr, and it was not Jared Stidham took advantage of it, but they still didn't win the game.
It's interesting that you point out that the two leaders in yards per completion were Watson and Stidham. Like, I actually think Stidham did some of the heavy lifting to get there. I don't think Watson did any of the heavy lifting, right? Like, all the big plays were, you know, receivers making plays on relatively easy throws. Yeah. But Stidham, like, really worked for it. And probably, you know, obviously secured himself, I think, a future as an NFL backup too, right? Like, this is everything that you'd want from a backup quarterback. And I don't think anybody's ever going to make him a starter necessarily, but just a tremendous game from him. Again, I think probably like 99th percentile performance from him relative to expectations.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, it was really exciting. And again, just reminds you that there's some hope for the Raiders offense next year. Anything on the 49ers here? I mean, obviously, I do got to talk about my guy Brandon Ayuk here. 26% first downs per route run. He was awesome in this game. He's getting close to 1,000 yards on the season, which is great to see. Just a reminder that he's been like a star all season long. Great player. And Brock Purdy, like, there were definitely some opportunities where, you know, left some stuff on the field. The drives kind of stalled out. You know, he's certainly the one interception he had on the George Kittle target. That one's going to leave a scar if you had George Kittle, because he could have easily just walked that thing into the end zone. Yep. But overall, they're not a second seed in the NFC at this point because of the Vikings messing up on their end.
Yeah, they've got they actually enter week 18 with a shot at the top seed. I thought this was the first game where, like, Purdy, and again, still been very impressed with Brock Purdy. This is multiple touchdowns in five straight games. But this was like, and I think we've been saying all along, you know, he's basically doing exactly what Jimmy Garoppolo would do in these games. You know, it's just been this steady stream of two touchdowns, 220 yards, 230 yards. I feel like this past week you saw a couple of the throws that Jimmy also would have missed, right? Like, because Jimmy doesn't he doesn't make every challenging throw, and he doesn't make every downfield throw. And Purdy missed a couple. And the one to Kittle was really, you know, obviously impactful in many, many fantasy leagues. Kittle still got one, but could have had another two touchdown game. Could have had a walk in. So that was a bit disappointing. But still, you're getting everything from Purdy that you could have possibly expected from Jimmy Garoppolo, and I wouldn't expect it to stop. This is an offense that gets Debo Samuel back, right? Like, he returned to practice last week. So they're going to be, you know, by the time we actually get to the playoffs, it's going to be a fully operational Niners offense. Whether Garoppolo can make it back at any point is now pretty irrelevant, because Purdy is doing exactly what he would.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan's like not even really wanted to entertain the idea that Jimmy could come back or whatever. And I get it, because like you said, Brock Purdy's doing a reasonable impression of Jimmy Garoppolo. And you mentioned he misses some of those downfield throws. Jimmy mostly doesn't even attempt those like downfield throws, and credit to Purdy, even if they don't always look great, they don't always end up completed. Some of them can end in a bit disastrous. He at least tries to make those throws. So credit to him. The 49ers are they're cruising, man. They should be set up pretty well as they enter here into the postseason. Let's move on to another game that had big postseason ramifications. Buccaneers 30, Panthers 24. I tried to manifest a Panthers victory here, NFC South championship for the Carolina Panthers. It didn't work because, man, Mike Evans is all the way back, baby. 207 yards, 3 touchdowns. This was the game we had been waiting on for Mike Evans. It finally arrived here in week 17.
So I'm probably one of the few people that had Mike Evans going in like an actual fantasy championship, right? It's still not settled, because the guy I was playing with, a mutual friend, Chris Harris, was starting Tom Brady. So he obviously had a big day as well. But was it the first drive of the game where they took that deep shot to Evans that hit him in the numbers? He had to come back for it a little bit, hit him in the numbers, and he dropped it. And you were like, oh man, well, there's his one chance, you know, I was thinking in the moment, because every game he gets like one opportunity to make a deep downfield play, and it either gets erased by a penalty or he drops it, or it's a weird miscommunication between Brady and Evans. And he dropped that one. And I'm like, well, they played their one deep shot card, and now we're not going to see that. And then it just kept coming. They had advantageous matchups on the outside, and they took advantage of it. And some of the time it was just Evans running by a dude, you know, hand up. And that was great to see. Like, could this not have been happening all year? Is what you had to wonder. But it was outstanding. And this is what the offense should be. They got nothing out of the running game, really. I believe that both Leonard Fournette and Rashad White were under 3 yards per carry. Not particularly impressive. They're perfectly capable receivers. But, you know, they attacked one-on-one matchups on the outside, and Evans just won repeatedly. And it corrected his whole season, right? Like, now you're going to look at these numbers at the end of the year, and you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that was one of the best years of Mike Evans' career. Well, no, it was one of the ugliest years of his career for like a dozen weeks in the middle. And then at the back end, he filled in all the stats. But whatever, I'll take it. It was great to see. I was shocked that they went back to it and went back to it repeatedly after the early drop.
Yeah. I think this could have been happening all year. Obviously, you mentioned the matchups and the advantages that Tampa Bay had over Carolina's secondary. And those are certainly worth like starting the conversation with, because the Panthers were so beat up at cornerback. They placed, you know, J.C. Horn, who's had a great year for them, on IR this morning. They signed Josh Norman, you know, off the street. Josh Norman, who was like being a barista at the coffee shop he owned, you know, like that's what Josh Norman was doing a couple of weeks ago, you know, and he's out there for this Carolina defense. And then the guys that played, you know, ahead of him were obviously very far down the depth chart. I mean, CJ Henderson, bro, come on, some of those plays against Mike Evans, give me a break. And those also, the injuries at corner forced them to play Jeremy Chinn as their like primary slot corner. And of course, Chris Godwin obviously doesn't have the game that Mike Evans does, but he also goes 9 of 9 for 120 yards. Like, those all had something to do with themselves. However, this could have been happening with Mike Evans all year, because people ask, like, what's wrong with Mike Evans? I don't think there's anything been wrong with Mike Evans this year. He's definitely missed a handful of plays, you know, he dropped stuff like that. That's been a little bit of it, but And then when they take these shots, some of them get called back from penalty. I get that. But, you know, I harped on Tom Brady's 1.88 time to throw against the Cardinals on Christmas, you know, 2.3 seconds over the course of the season. On the whole here, his time to throw was 2.36 seconds. So it was still pretty fast. However, on two of the touchdowns, the first two touchdowns to Mike Evans, 2.6 time to throw and 3.4 time to throw on those two touchdowns. Like, sometimes you sit back there a little bit and you know, like, I've got the guys that can beat this secondary and beat them bad. Those opportunities are there for Mike Evans. Those opportunities have been there for Mike Evans all year. It's not too little too late for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It might be too little too late for a few fantasy teams out there, but just seeing that the Bucs can still do this, it definitely made me a little, I don't want to say nervous, or made me a little more conscious that scenario that I painted out on the preview podcast, where they're going to run through a couple of, Detroit type team, Seattle, whatever, who even beat Dallas in the first round of the playoffs and advanced far into the postseason. Just seeing them do this made me a little more nervous that could happen.
Yeah, I feel like the offense that we just saw on Sunday can beat any team in the NFC. Maybe the Eagles are a stretch, but I feel like they can beat any team in the NFC. I hope that they carry that identity into the playoffs. 19 catches on 21 targets for Evans and Godwin. That's pretty good. I will also say that there hasn't been a moment all season where I've thought that Brady was washed. I've thought that the ball is coming out of his hand with like the usual zip. So this sort of always felt like it was in play. They've had obviously a bunch of offensive line injuries throughout the year. He had some time and took full advantage of the time in this last game. And that's just a huge deal. I guess if I have one fantasy gripe from this game, it is the Leonard Fournette negated touchdown, the touchdown that they wiped out on replay review that I don't know how they determined he was not in the end zone that led to a Tom Brady, short plunge that is keeping my matchup this week interesting. I'm a little bit irritated by that. That's all. Just wanted that out there on the record.
Also on the record, speaking of Mike Evans, RIP to my mom's fantasy team. She did not play Mike Evans this week. Oh. And unfortunately it's over. We have,
I don't blame
18.
Anybody who didn't play Mike Evans this week, by the way.
Like, I know. Yeah. It's been, I get it. It is what it is. It's the exact scenario that we talked about, Andy. We didn't want her to win the championship, because then it would have been a little too like, like now we have full plausible deniability that I have anything to do with any of this. Julie and Jess will be fighting it out for the week 18 Treviso Babes fantasy football championship. So we shall see what happens there. So shout out to the Treviso Babes. They've given us a lot of fun, a lot of material all season. So I had to mention that. And I don't know, Andy, we'll see. You're right there in Florida. How come you're not down there doing hosting some kind of fantasy party for them? Maybe we'll work out your appearance fee in the off season, and we'll get you together with the Babes.
Yeah, I don't do a group call like for free. There's going to be an appearance fee. I'm the prop king, for God's sakes. I can't just, I gotta leverage that.
That's a fantastic point. You do have to leverage that. Maybe you can send 12 matching shirts to the
on the plus side. I can sell merch when I'm down there. Yeah. I feel like we haven't heard a lot of Julie and Jess all year. So is this like a dark horse matchup? Yeah.
Yeah, number one seed Leslie went down this week as well. These are a couple dark horse teams, and shout out to them. So we'll see what happens. That's fantasy, man, and that's what happens in the first season playing fantasy. They're all experienced, like, oh yeah, some goofball dark horse team can come in here and topple some champs. That's just the way it works. We should talk about the Carolina Panthers real quick. Their season's over, eliminated from playoff contention. Sling and Sam went down with 304 yards and 3 touchdowns. There was a couple like, oh boy, Sam Darnold moments in this game, which hadn't happened since week 12, since he got reinserted in the lineup. But that's okay. He's not the future of this team at quarterback, but I think he proved himself to be like a pretty capable backup quarterback in a good situation. And I mean, DJ Moore, great game here, obviously probably for, that was definitely maybe a little too little too late, but it is funny that like, what's he scored 7 touchdowns now on the season with DJ Moore. And like, if I told you, Andy, he was going to score 7 touchdowns this year, you'd be like, oh, top 10 receiver. And
unfortunately, wide receiver 14, wide receiver 12. Yeah,
that journey has not been quite as smooth to get there.
No, not at all. Great game from him. Further reminder that if Deontay Foreman, that if they don't get the right game script, that Foreman's not going to do a thing because they're not going to target him. Right. Like he He absolutely vanished in this one. It was pretty much all Darnold and DJ Moore. DJ Moore is so good. Good to see him close at least the fantasy season with a 10 target game. I have this like far off idea that there's a path for him to arrive in Chicago. I hope that can happen. I'm shopping the whole league for receivers that might be available, and DJ Moore is near the top of my list.
I feel like people have been trying to wish cast DJ Moore on another team all year. It's like he's one of their best players.
Saying it would be helpful for DJ Moore either. I don't know that it's some big win.
Yeah,
for
I know. I was gonna say
it's a win for me personally.
Well, yeah, let's transition to Lions 41, Bears 10. I mean, Bears fans, it's got to be at a point where it's like, can we just end the season? Can we forfeit the last game or whatever? Because, I mean, this was such a beatdown. At one point, it's like, wow, Justin Fields is 100 rushing yards, I think, in the first quarter, ends the day with 132. But they have they have nothing going in the drop back pass game right now. It's tough to watch for all involved.
Well, you know, one of the big problems there is after the early, you know, the usual Justin Fields sensational 50 plus yard run at the end of like a 60 something yard run, he kind of pulled up, and then trainers were working on him on the sideline. I think it may have been a hip issue. But it's a little bit murky. You know, Fields is getting checked for a concussion basically every week now, it seems. He's taken a ton of hits. He's been sacked now 55 times. He's only attempted 318 passes, and he's been sacked 55 times. Like, make the math work on that, right? Like, a lot of that is him. A lot of it, of course, is an offensive line that just caves in immediately off the snap of the football fairly frequently, right? People are getting through all the time. But that's just an utterly unacceptable number. It's amazing that he's made it to week 17. Almost every person I know in the Chicago media and everybody I follow on Twitter who was watching this game, everybody just wanted Fields out. They couldn't protect him. Nobody's getting open downfield. The game got out of hand, you know, certainly after the first half, right? First half ends with an interception where the Lions literally rush no one. You know, the Bears offensive line just sort of standing out in front of Justin Fields, not doing anything. Literally everyone on the field dropped back into coverage and ended with a Hutchinson interception. Anyway, he just should have been benched after that because he was clearly hurting. They didn't have a lot of designed runs for him after that. They just got nothing going offensively. If anybody thought that the return of Chase Claypool would do something, no, it did not. That was utterly ineffective. Minorly interesting for this backfield is the fact that Khalil Herbert and David Montgomery basically split it. Neither one did much of anything because the Bears weren't sustaining drives after their first couple of drives. The first couple of drives were nice. The first couple were like legitimate NFL offense. And then they just didn't sustain any drives and couldn't keep the offense on the field. But it did end with David Montgomery having 28 snaps and Herbert 20 snaps. Herbert only had 5 touches, but again, per his usual like 6 yards per carry, he was great. I would love to see him in something close to a full workload. He's terrible in pass protection. He's had some embarrassing moments in pass protection, so I don't know that we ever get there, right? Like, you definitely need your running back to be able to pick up a blitzer if you're part of this Bears offense. So that is going to be a small concern. But I think Herbert, obviously somebody that you're interested in Dynasty. And the Bears just like have so many needs. And most everybody in Chicago is just really focused on like what their draft pick is going to be and whether they're going to trade down. And if they do trade down, what does the trade down look like? Because they have so many holes to fill. They need offensive linemen. They obviously need receiving weapons. Like, they have all the holes except for quarterback. Like, they may have figured out the one big thing, but they need everything else.
Justin Fields, 14.7% sack rate this year. It would lead the league in 2018. It would lead the league in 2019, 2020, 2021. That's wild. Yeah, I mean, by a lot too. It's actually not even really that close. The only guy who's like close to him in terms of like leading the league in sack rate the last 3 or 4 years would be Justin Fields last year. His 13.4% sack rate so far, like from 2018 to 2022 combined, he leads the league. He's the only guy that's like played a ton that's over 10%. It's absurd.
Yeah, one thing that's probably a little bit on, I mean, more than a little bit on Justin himself and certainly on the coaching is that there's never a moment where the ball just comes out immediately, right? Like there never seems to be a moment where it's just like, you know, the ball hits his hands and then hot route, it's immediately out. where he's obviously, you know, eliminated a couple of options pre-snap and decided where he wants to go. And we just get 4 yards and move to the next play. Like that never happens. And we're going to have to start seeing some of it, like, as he matures.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, I know that the coaching staff has said that these are like valuable reps for him. And theoretically, it should be valuable reps for him. But within the confines of this, with his own problems mixed in as well, but the confines of like this drop back pass game with that offensive line and those receivers, like they're not valuable reps. So I get why every Bears fan would be like, that's enough already. The team that won this game, I guess we could talk about as well. Lions 41 points, Detroit, Seattle, and Green Bay. I mean, my God, Green Bay, we'll get there here in a second. They're all alive for the NFC's seventh seed. You know, the Lions have like 30-40% chance to make the playoffs, but, I still like the way they're finishing the season. Obviously, both running backs get off here, which is good to see.
Yeah, Detroit's offense can obviously put up a number. So I don't like to listen to a lot of the national conversation right now. You'd sort of think that the Packers are already in. And obviously, the Packers are coming off probably their most impressive game of the season. Everything worked, dominated the Vikings. Detroit's offense will put 30 on you, though. Like, Detroit's offense is good. You have to stop those running backs, and that has been a major weakness for Green Bay all season long. Somebody's got to stop Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, and they played great. They played great in a very low degree of difficulty matchup against Chicago, but they were outstanding. Like, the run was in play all day, and the Bears couldn't stop it. They're all of a sudden, like, they're doing really fun things with their tight ends near the goal line, right? Like, I think it might have been Brock Wright's second touchdown catch on the day. He really sold the block, right? Like, he was blocking the shit out of somebody and ended up in the full scrum and then just busted out of it and caught a nice little ball from Jared Goff. Looked really easy. Like, they're everything's clicking. Amon-Ra St. Brown could have scored in this game, didn't, but had a, you know, was certainly plenty effective. They are a problem for the Packers. Like, I don't, you know, we're discussing it, not necessarily you and I, but again, a lot of the national voices are discussing it as if this is already Green Bay and what's Green Bay's first round matchup. But man, when things are going well for Detroit, particularly for that offense, they're kind of a party.
Yeah. So let's move right to the Packers there. It was definitely it was a great game. Great game from Green Bay. Obviously, they get a little bit of help from Kirk Cousins on a pick six there. Let's save the Vikings here for just a second. The Packers, look, they've sort of become the team I thought they would be this year, where their defense has taken a step over the last few weeks. Now, obviously, some of the opponents that they faced, like, they faced these Bears that we just talked about. They faced the Baker Mayfield Rams. Tua, you know, with the was should he even been in the game the second half? You know, obviously that whole discussion there. But the Viking this takedown of the Vikings, and the Vikings are a flawed team all on their own. Like, I thought this would be a team where their pass defense was really, really good. Their running game with Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon combined, really good. And Aaron Rodgers made just enough plays. You know, it wasn't the focal point of the team. I feel like they've kind of become that team. So I understand why the national conversation is, oh, wow, the Packers definitely look, you know, they look scary right now, or they could make a little run here, because again, this team is certainly not, it's not as good as like the 13-3 operations we've seen previously, the 13 win operations we've seen under Matt LaFleur, but I think they've got a little bit of something going here, Andy. But to your point, the Lions could absolutely go and put a number on these teams. However, the way the pass defense played against Minnesota, I think, was really encouraging.
Yeah, I will say my point was more about the Lions than it was about, you know, I don't, you know, it comes naturally to me to disrespect the Packers. So there's always a little bit of that.
But I was going to say there was a lot of let's call it generational trauma in that little anti-Packers soliloquy you just had there.
Yes.
But we'll let it stand.
That is absolutely fair. It should go without saying that the Packers are playing extremely well right now. And this is the version of the Packers defense that was sort of promised to us, right? What a sort of carnival ride season for Jair Alexander, by the way. Like, it wasn't that long. It wasn't like a month and a half ago. He was getting clowned by Treylon Burks, who he absolutely could not stop. And then he's a big part of them locking up Justin Jefferson in this game. I thought they got real, like, you know, I haven't rewatched this game with a complete focus on Jefferson, but it certainly seemed like he was picking himself up off the turf a fair amount. Like, he was getting rerouted a fair amount. Like, they were pretty physical with him. And obviously we're helping against him, and it was as effective as anyone has been all season against Jefferson. Didn't help that, you know, the Vikings are now down. Are they down three linemen? Like, they have some problems on the offensive line now. Like, that is going to be an issue. That's a huge concern. But, you know, bad game from Cousins, bad game for the line generally. They now have, are they minus 19 in terms of point differential on the season, which is hilarious, which is what you would kind of expect from like a 7-win team and an 8-win team, and not a team that, you know, had a shot at the number one seed going into the weekend. So just they have a get right spot coming up against the Bears. I will say that. And I would trust that they would be able to get some things back on track. Christian Watson has to be, I know I'm bouncing all around between both teams here, but Christian Watson has to be a big concern. His health has to be a big concern going into week 18 in the playoffs, because that did not click. He saw 5 targets. Obviously hadn't practiced all week, so that's a, you know, you're talking about a rookie who's missed a ton of time this season, who's playing through something.
I was surprised he played
now.
Honestly, I was surprised.
They had no way of knowing exactly what version of Christian Watson they'd get, because they didn't see him on the field all week. I get him wanting to play. They obviously didn't need him to win this game, which was a total rout. But he's obviously going to have to be healthier than that if they're going to string together some wins in the postseason.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, if they're going to have a chance to like go into San Francisco, which is pretty hilarious that like there's a decent chance they end up going to San Francisco in the first round of the playoffs. And, you know, this is just like, well, we did all this conversation, all these crazy things with these two teams, 49ers, Packers, and here we are at the end of the year. Well, just like we get every year, it's going to be 49ers and Packers in the playoffs. Like, but putting that aside for a second, yeah, they're going to go to San Francisco. They're going to beat that defense. Like, they're going to need Christian Watson to make a couple hero plays, along with Aaron Rodgers. And that's a great call out by you. Couple things on the Jefferson side of it. Number one, I feel like this was almost like a funhouse mirror version of the Vikings that we get every week, which is just like, hey, if Justin, it's like the offense is strange because the offense, it's like not as good as you'd think on paper, because basically it's like, well, if Justin Jefferson doesn't do like hero stuff, if Justin Jefferson doesn't take a game over, the offense is not that good. Well, obviously Justin Jefferson catches one pass here on 5 targets. And you talked about the Jair Alexander part of this, and look, Alexander was awesome in this game. It was a great defensive game plan overall. Like, I think that, you know, when a receiver gets shut down, the first thing we want to look at it must have been like the one-on-one matchup of cornerback wide receiver. Well, usually, and we've seen this with Jefferson before, not to this extreme extent, but when the Lions had like Jeff Okuda play hard physical press coverage over Jefferson while also, you know, having a safety, like 2 eyes dedicated on basically every play. That's a lot of how this went too, where like Jair Alexander, if they moved Jefferson into the slot, he'd follow him in there. He'd cover the outside leverage. They'd have the safety sit on like the in-breaking route. They were just basically like, hey, you know what's going to happen here? Justin Jefferson's not going to be the one that kills us in this game. Like, Kirk Cousins, you're going to need to make other guys are going to have to step up. They just don't have a lot of other guys right now. As much as like the name brands are there, Hockenson is a good player, didn't have his best game here, but you know, the other receivers don't really threaten people on a down by down basis. And for Kirk Cousins too, I think that people know this about Kirk, that once you get pressure on him, and if those routes are taking longer to develop, he's not going to sit there and like force hard throws. Cause it's like, okay, I get it, Kirk, the coverage on Jefferson is difficult. You know, you've got 2 guys dedicated to him. You're going to need to let those plays sit a little longer if Alexander's just going to press the crap out of him at the snap. But you still can't leave a game where you lose 41-17 and throw the ball to Justin Jefferson 5 times. Like, you need to try to make it work. And that's on the coaching staff too, to like get Jefferson some screens. Like, with the times where they do play off coverage, like, make sure he's running a quick slant and get the ball in his hand. So it was just all the concerns that you'd have about the Vikings, they all played out basically in this game.
Yeah. The box score, I will say, looked okay for Hockenson, but he probably had 3 balls that I think he would expect himself to catch, and that you would really need, like, you know, in a high level game against a quality opponent, like, you've got to catch those. Targeted 12 times, pulls in 7 of them. Again, like, just left a bunch of yards out there, and it's probably the second time in the last 3 weeks he's done that. He was spectacular last week, right? Great for fantasy, great in reality. But this is not the first time that we've seen him leave some catches and some yards out on the field.
Yeah, I know. That's actually kind of happened quite a lot with the Vikings ever since he moved there, which is very strange. But good game by the Packers. They definitely have a chance to go in the postseason and maybe make a little bit of noise. It was very just big credit to the defense, which I didn't expect to turn it around like this, but has certainly turned it around. They've had the talent to do it, but kind of question the coaching, all that type of stuff. So I don't know. The Packers will be interesting to talk about here as we head into Week 18 in a very, very big game against the Detroit Lions. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finally talk about maybe some AFC teams here, I guess. Ready for this. All right. Patriots 23, Dolphins 21. It's unfortunate because, you know, obviously the Tua concussion situation, you know, Teddy Bridgewater leaves in this game. Teddy Bridgewater feels like every time he gets in a game to start, he doesn't finish it.
Yeah.
Just a nightmare situation at the quarterback position for Miami, which does feel like it's going to cause their like playoff. See, you know, they're still have a 46% chance to make the postseason, according to 538, but it feels like the Dolphins season is slipping away a little bit because of the situation at quarterback.
Yeah, that percentage doesn't feel right.
That feels that feels like they think Tua is going to play in week 18, which I don't know about that.
Yeah. I would say one of the biggest differences and like they just weren't going downfield, right? Not a lot of downfield stuff to Hill, to Waddle. A weird number of targets for Raheem Mostert, who was great. Like the running backs played great. Heavy usage for both Wilson and Mostert. Both of them played a ton. Both of them saw a ton of touches. 17 for Mostert and 18 for Wilson. So they were both kind of a right answer if you needed a flex out of the Miami backfield, but just not enough work for Tyreek and certainly not enough work for Waddle. Like all of a sudden Gesicki is involved. Like that's just like you have two absolute elite playmakers that cannot be single covered. And they combined, you know, in Tyreek and Waddle for like a dozen targets, which is just not enough. Hill kind of saved his fantasy day, obviously, with a play that I guess is going to go down as a carry, as a rush attempt. It was real close to being a pass. That feels like a stat correction that could still be looming out there that could flip a fantasy matchup.
Right.
Because that may have been a catch. I don't know. But he did save his fantasy day with that. But you just got to find ways. Like, if they're not going to go downfield, that should still be okay with Tyreek Hill. Like, you can target Tyreek anywhere. You can you know, give him gimmicky touches, and he's just such an impossible problem. He's just got to see the ball more than he did. If you're going to be, you know, the highest and best version of that offense, whatever it is with Thompson at the controls.
Yeah, I agree. That was disappointing to see. It's so difficult. You keep cycling quarterbacks in and out, like especially mid game like that. That can always be challenging. On the Patriots side of this, I mean, I guess you got to give them credit for winning this game. Again, just 538 has them with a 31% chance to make the playoffs. They're all battling for the seventh seed. These two teams are battling for the seventh seed, along with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who we'll talk about later. The Patriots have to go to Buffalo in Week 18. I mean, come on. I'm really not trying to see Mac Jones in the playoffs. And this, not just Mac Jones, but this entire operation. I'm really not trying to see that. The Dolphins will welcome the Jets in week 18, and then the Steelers will welcome the Browns in week 18. So it's going to be a fun one to see how it plays out. But yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say about the Patriots anymore. I just hope that I don't want them to make the postseason because I don't want them to like, oh, we can run it back with Matt Patricia as the right. offensive coordinator. Like, please, let's not allow that to happen.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest takeaway on the Patriots side, at least fantasy wise, is that the Damian Harris return, probably combined with some relatively disappointing games from Ramondre toward the end of the season, plus the injury that Ramondre is playing through, that was a straight committee. They almost perfectly split the snaps in this one. They almost perfectly split the touches. We were seeing Harris at the goal line again, right? Like that's a huge problem if you had been banking on, like if you happen to have a fantasy title in week 18, not recommended, but if you happen to, all of a sudden you have to think of Ramondre no longer as a fringy RB1 and more like down in the, especially against Buffalo, like down in the RB3 territory. That's not particularly encouraging. Tyquan Thornton had a game that was pretty good. He found the end zone, could have had another touchdown. He was pretty impressive. It is obviously it's a Mac Jones led offense, so you're not expecting, you know, blow up performances from any of these receivers, but that's felt like kind of a standard issue Patriots offensive attack, given the context of this season, right? It was a little bit ugly. It was a little bit committee-ish in spots. But they end up getting it done. They're not going to beat Buffalo next week, I wouldn't think, but Buffalo sometimes allows themselves into a close game that doesn't feel like it should be a close game. But at least they've got something to play for. That's fun.
Yeah, we haven't seen the Bills play, obviously, as we're taping this, so that remains to be seen there. Let's move on to the next game here. Chiefs 27, Broncos 24. Broncos almost got the we fired the head coach bump and upset Kansas City, but they ultimately did not get it done. What are your big takes from this game, Andy?
So Mahomes completed passes to 11 different receivers, including himself. That was fun. Had one of those like batted pass situations that he
always super impressive. Yes.
Love it. Got a small gain out of Kadarius Toney. Made a little bit of noise. Didn't play a whole. He's like, that's going to be the issue with Kadarius Toney. He's not on the field very much. I don't even think he played 20 snaps, but 4 catches, 71 yards. And this is like 1 week after having, scoring a touchdown again in limited usage. So he's, you need somebody to play in a week 18 matchup where you think you're an underdog. He might be a little bit interesting. He's playing a little bit more. If he can get some of those McCole Hardman touches near the goal line.
Sky Moore got hurt in this game too, so that opens up.
Yeah, so we've got no Sky Moore. We have Hardman having a setback in practices, so we're probably not going to see him the rest of the season. So that does open up a little bit of an opportunity for Toney. And, I shouldn't need to tell people that when he's healthy, he looks great. Jerick McKinnon kept it rolling. Another guy who's actually not finishing with a lot of... Maybe he shouldn't be hard to rank because he just scores 2 touchdowns every week. And maybe I should just pencil that in, but he's just not handling a lot of touches, right? Like he doesn't get that many carries. He is a huge part of what they do at the goal line. And Mahomes is always looking out for him. And I should probably just accept that when the best quarterback on earth is looking out for a guy, I should probably rank that guy in the top 15 all the time. And yet I don't, because he's not getting a ton of touches. But he, of course, is doing the Damian Williams thing from a few years ago. And he's just finding the end zone once or twice every week. So he was great. That offense keeps humming. This is the second time in like a month that they've allowed Denver into an unnecessarily close game. I don't quite understand that. Like I was just talking about Buffalo playing some games that are unnecessarily close. Well, the Chiefs certainly do the same thing. That's kind of that's almost their specialty. But it's a fun game for Mahomes. Again, it was a spread the wealth game. On the Broncos side, man, Chase Edmonds played a little. That was not that anybody's going to start Chase Edmonds or Latavius Murray necessarily in a, week 18 matchup. But Chase Edmonds was obviously pretty involved in this one. The tight ends were super involved. Albert O, like, absolutely resurrected. Almost forgot about that guy, like preseason sleeper Albert O. Getting targets, finding the end zone. They ran a lot of 2 tight end stuff. The receivers did almost nothing. Like another really couple boring fantasy lines from Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. So not much there. I guess the most exciting thing, if you have any investment in the Broncos at all, is that Russell Wilson was a proactive runner, a couple of rushing touchdowns. We sort of came into this season worried that element of his game was just gone, that he didn't want to do it anymore, that, maybe he'd aged out of that phase of his career. But he was a super effective and proactive runner in this one. And that was, that's obviously good to see. He scored a couple of touchdowns that way.
Yeah. Hopefully that's something that, again, I'm not trying to sit here and be like, oh, the Broncos can fix Russell Wilson or whatever all off season. But that's got to be a part of the solution going forward. Like he has to at least be a little more proactive doing that. It was nice to see guys like Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler like cape up for Russell Wilson on Twitter. And
yes.
Then Russell get emotional about that in the post game press conference. I don't love every aspect of the Russell Wilson experience. I think I've been pretty vocal about that. However, it's good to see that the team doesn't, the narrative is, wow, the locker room like hates Russell Wilson or all this stuff. Like, at least some of these receivers, went to bat for him, and it obviously meant a lot for him, which, also maybe that leads you to, if you really want to be tinfoil hat about it, like, okay, well, maybe it doesn't happen on a day-to-day basis. I don't know. So whatever. Either way, the Broncos are careening towards a difficult offseason, and the Chiefs, I think their defense is definitely a problem. That's going to be an issue for them, but it was cool to see Kadarius Toney step up a little bit. Ran around on 33% of the dropbacks. I bet that would be higher in week 18. Their receiver core, man. I mean, the Justin Watson thing, he was down to like 33% routes, route participation. So, you know, splitting with Kadarius Toney there. What a weird receiver core this has been all year
really,
long.
Really
so, absolutely bizarre. I can't wait to see what the 2023 Chiefs receiver rotation looks like, and if it's any less bizarre than this one. Speaking of bizarre, we were all talking about the Houston Texans. I know I talked about them on this podcast a lot. Like, okay, hey, they're out there flying around. They're hitting people. Well, the Jaguars beat them 31-3. The Jaguars mostly got out of this thing in the second half. Travis Etienne's really the only one from a fantasy perspective who had like a big game, because he was the only one that needed to have a big game here, basically.
Yeah, and didn't even have to handle like a significant workload to do it, right? Goes over 100 yards on minimal touches in this thing. Could have had a bigger day if he needed to, but we saw like a hasty touchdown. Snoop found the end zone, right? Like, man, if you had started Trevor Lawrence, I did have a league in which I started Trevor Lawrence. I think I still eke out a win there, but I'd started Trevor Lawrence. Like, he didn't have to do much of anything in this thing. They just overwhelmed the Texans. Got everything they wanted to out of it. It was, they did have a choice coming into this game as to whether they were even going to roll out their regulars. They could have just saved all the bullets for the Tennessee matchup, which is what Tennessee did. But they have this complicated situation where they do have technically a path to the playoffs. As long as they won this game, they could still lose in week 18 and have like a 6-10% chance, something like that, of actually backing in. So I appreciate that they played their guys. It was moderately helpful to me. Houston needs everything except for, you know, they've probably got Damian Pierce figured out, and they have almost nothing else figured out, right? Like, they need a total overhaul. They're definitely going to have the draft capital to do it. So it's going to be real fun to see what Houston looks like next year. It is not at all fun to watch this version of the Texans.
No, it is certainly not. And on that note, we shall quickly move away from this game here. Chargers 31, Rams 10. Let's start with Cam Akers here. Let's start on the losing side of things. I'm really loving doing that right now. So Cam Akers, he's actually averaged 4.9 yards per carry from week 13 on. He's run for 408 yards, 6 scores since the calendar turned to December. We just talked about the Texans don't have a lot of things figured out. The Rams aren't quite in that bad of a situation, but they have certainly, you know, a lot of questions they need to ask themselves in the offseason. I think we can feel pretty good going into 2023, feeling like, okay, Cam Akers is this team's featured back, and he's coming off a nice end of the season, which is pretty crazy considering this is a guy that they sounded like they could not wait to bounce off the roster in, like, you know, early October.
Right. This is a guy who was allowed to leave the scene for a couple weeks in the middle of the season, and now he's the best thing they've got going on offense. Like, some of the things that we haven't been seeing from Akers in his comeback from injury, you think back to the playoffs last year, like, just not a lot of explosive plays. Well, he had a carry that went for 40 plus yards in this one.
Yeah.
Really looked great. There was also an opportunity here, I thought, for him to have perhaps a long touchdown reception. Baker Mayfield just missed him, like a near connection. Yep. That wasn't. So as good as his day was, it could have been, I don't know, it could have been like 180 total yard day, right? It could have been a big one. So very impressive finish to the season for Akers. And I think you're right. That is maybe the one thing from the tail end of this season that they can really carry into 2023 and feel, well, I guess we're in 2023, aren't we? But they can really carry into next season and feel spectacular about. Like, he's fixed, I think, to a large extent. As long as he's healthy going into next year, he now, to me, looks like that guy who had, you know, the signature game against Seattle in the playoffs. He looks like that guy who was like the best version of Akers when they needed him most in the postseason just a couple years ago. So very impressive turn from him. On the Chargers side, hero game from Austin Ekeler. He was great. Hero game, seriously, from Mike Williams, who made insane catches, right? Like, Ekeler with his usual ho-hum two touchdown game, happens all the time, but he had one from like 70 yards out. That was awesome. Chargers are playing really well, and they're getting healthy defensively, and they have all their offensive playmakers back, and they're frisky. They're fun. Like the idea of the Chargers pulling a playoff upset is not crazy.
No, not at all. They can definitely be one of those like berserker wild card teams that comes in here and, and gets on a little bit of a run based on who they play, all that type of stuff. I mean, yeah, when they're healthy, it's pretty fun to watch. You know, I know Austin's going to be he's going to be excited about actually having 122 yards on the ground, like a big rushing performance. Obviously, comes on, you know, one big play, but they ran the ball well when they had opportunities here against a Rams defense that, you know, at different times of the year has been a great run defense. Obviously, they're playing without Aaron Donald right now. That's a rather big X factor. But, yeah, I know Austin will be excited about that. And overall, yeah, Chargers are dangerous when they have all their guys healthy. And, you know, Mike Williams, that one catch was just absolutely insane. You know, he's not a guy who gets open at a rate that, like, you could just funnel like 10 targets a game to him or anything like that, because they'd be really inefficient targets. But when you can get him on one of those plays, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Really just sort of satisfying to see Austin Ekeler, knowing his commitment to the fantasy audience generally. Just, I don't know, seeing him have that week in week 17 when so many people needed it, and he's been so generous with his time with fantasy managers and the fantasy community generally. It was just awesome to see.
Especially when there was like a moment earlier in the week where it's like, is he not going to play in week 17? So it's a pretty cool thing for him. I know we'll talk about that early or later on in the week with him. Seahawks 23, Jets 6. The Magic Mike White moment was not there against this team. And, you know, the Jets have been eliminated from postseason contention. It's not a revelatory take here, but my God, they need to be laser focused on fixing the quarterback situation this offseason, because, man, there's just so much meat left on the bone with this offense right now.
In some ways, maybe this game did them a favor, because they, like, it would be really difficult to convince yourself that Mike White is the future at quarterback for this team coming off that game against that Seattle defense. Just a couple of misreads, some bad throws, some just missed a bunch of guys early on plays that didn't result in interceptions, you know, but just misfires. Just a really, really ugly game from Mike White. And, you know, credit to Mike White. He's playing through some serious stuff, like had a pretty legit injury that I am confident is affecting his comfort level day to day all of the time. So it's credit to him for going out there, but that was not a good game. That was not a particularly competitive game. The backfield situation too got pretty murky, because I want to say that Ty Johnson, if he didn't start the game, he took the first carry of the game for the Jets. Nobody had a day on the ground against Seattle, which was a little bit surprising too, right? Seattle's a funny defense, because they've had, you know, there was a moment in the middle of the season where you're like, oh, they figured some stuff out, and then they got, you know, they got clowned by the Niners. They've been clowned by a couple of other teams too. But then this was obviously a very impressive performance. The Jets offense, though, was just kind of a big clown car. Garrett Wilson's great, and he needs to find somebody who can consistently week in and week out maximize his talent. They have a lot of stuff to figure out, and they have clearly, I don't think that the answer at quarterback is on that roster.
There's no, all right, well, maybe Mike White can compete with like a Gardner Minshew type if we sign him in free agency. No, none of that. Like, they need to find, like, even if it's a Jimmy Garoppolo, even if it's a Derek Carr type, like, they need to find someone that can be a real adult in the room, basically, for the quarterback position. And yeah, Seattle, they're a funny team. They still got a chance here as we enter the final week of the season. Not a big game from either of the receivers, but that's fine. That you're right, though. That defense, real tough to find the thread on them. They're like different chapters of the season. They've been different defenses, and that's been hard to figure out.
Kenneth Walker was awesome, by the way. I should say that. I think his first carry that went for like 60 yards. He was great. He's playing through some stuff too. Just a phenomenal performance from him. But it was like Kenneth Walker and the tight ends were the whole offense.
Yeah, pretty bizarre. All right, Giants 38, Colts 10. Nick Foles gets knocked out of this game. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau does the snowman right next to him. Interesting choice by Kayvon there, but we'll leave it at that. Nick Foles not going to play in week 18, by the way. They announced this morning that Sam Ellinger is going to start. Okay. I mean, the Colts are what they are. Michael Pittman, if he needed to play him, had 6 catches and a touchdown, but not really interesting at all. You got anything on the Colts or who cares?
It's kind of a who cares situation. It's we should note that Zach Moss is the running back, right? Like the Deion Jackson thing is totally over. It seems like he's kind of been leapfrogged by Jordan Wilkins as the number two, but Moss is now like he's averaged the last 3 games. He's getting 75 scrimmage yards. He's touching the ball 17 times a game. Like he's probably the guy that if you have to trust a Colt in a flex spot or something like that, Zach Moss, I guess, is the guy. The Giants are the interesting team here, right? This was like a signature game for Daniel Jones. He was phenomenal, phenomenal on the ground. Some great moments as a passer, even though he's, again, it bears repeating. That guy's working with Richie James and Darius Slayton and Isaiah Hodgins. It's just not that's not the receiving core that anybody would want to be saddled with. And he looked phenomenal in this one. He was really great. I think there is I know Brian Daboll said after the game that they're not going to rest starters. They should probably rest starters. Like
this morning, he sounded a little bit more like, yeah, we'll do what's best for the team when talking about it. So, coming off of the, you know, sometimes you say something in the heat of the moment coming off a game like that, like, oh, yeah, we're going to keep rolling or whatever. And then you think about it, you know, 12 hours later or something like that. And you're like, ah, well, you know what? maybe we'll rest starters.
Yeah, Saquon Barkley can take the week off, right? Daniel Jones can probably take the week off, and that's fine. I believe that they are locked into the sixth seed. There's no, you know, there's no moving up, no moving down. It is a consequential game, right? It's a game that the Eagles are going to need, but the Giants can't concern themselves with that. The Giants just have to get, you know, they have to be as healthy as possible for the wild card round. And I wouldn't think that they would trot out starters certainly for a full game in this one. I hate ranking players for week 18, but no matter what they say, I'm probably going to rank Saquon Barkley as if he's barely going to play.
Yeah, I agree. And man, I mean, Barkley, 12 carries, 58 yards. Never would have expected that if you told me they were going to beat the Colts 38-10. Just an unfortunate end to Barkley's fantasy season. Like, I know people, I know there are people out there, and I know some of them personally, that are like, damn it, Daniel Jones, 11 carries, 91 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, that's the running performance. But still, obviously, a great season for Saquon Barkley, and I agree with you. He could certainly and certainly deserves to take the week off. Just on Daniel Jones real quick, because I do think it's interesting. Look, I totally publicly flogged myself in my Care Don't Care recap article about, like, I was wrong about Daniel Jones. You know, I 100% didn't buy any of the Daniel Jones stuff. I thought Tyrod Taylor was going to start games for this team. I'm sure I said it on podcast. I'm sure I tweeted about it. Whatever. I know that's on my resume. So I take the L for that one. And you know, I rolled my eyes at every single, like, look at what Brian Daboll did with Josh Allen when talking about Daniel Jones in the preseason. But I don't know that I think Daniel Jones is suddenly going to become the next Josh Allen. I'm still skeptical about that. But I absolutely think at this point, like, the Giants have to figure out some sort of solution with Daniel Jones to bring him back and then surround him with guys who are not, no disrespect, Richie James, Isaiah Hodgins, you know, whatever, in the receiver room. Like, they got to come up with a plan at that position. And if they do, I am very intrigued by what Daniel Jones could be in this offense for at least the next few years, even if I'm still skeptical that he's going to, you know, suddenly do a full Josh Allen.
Yeah, I think to your point, he's certainly elevated himself to such an extent that, like, you wouldn't be particularly interested in a Jimmy Garoppolo or a Derek Carr or least at that tier of quarterback, right? Like, you don't need to reinvent things with just another sketchy QB. I thought he was really impressive in this one. He had some really nice moments. I'm thinking of the touchdown pass. It was short, but the touchdown pass to Richie James when things were breaking down and it was a pretty messy pocket and there's bodies all around, and he was calm and just sort of, you know, sorted through the mail a little bit and found his guy. And like, early career Daniel Jones, they don't score on that play. It's nice to see a guy develop in this way. And I would understand complaining about Daniel Jones' rushing contributions if you're tied to Saquon Barkley, but he looked awesome. He should be running 8 times a game. He's great at it, right? Like, it is a real part of his game, and he's clearly playing with like an assuredness that was just not part of his profile early in his career, and that has been really fun to see.
All right, next game up here, Saints 20, Eagles 10. My only big takeaway from this one is that Gardner Minshew, nice player, probably a decent backup quarterback, but and Devontae Smith has another huge game here, 113 yards. A.J. Brown, 97 yards and a touchdown. I don't care about any of that because it's so clear that the Eagles offense really lacks the teeth that Jalen Hurts brings to the equation here. It's like Minshew's still too mistake-prone and not good enough on the high end to overcome those mistakes. Jalen Hurts will play in week 18. That was announced this morning. And I mean, they need him. They need him if they want to keep the number one seed. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't really know if there are people out there who believe that it was just the system or it's just the strength of the supporting cast, but that, you know, that is clearly not the case because Minshew's fine. But he threw a killer interception here and he's just not Jalen Hurts. And this is not, you know, we're not going to get the full expression of the Eagles offensive potential without Jalen Hurts behind center. Really tough game. If you at least you got the long touchdown to A.J. Brown, if you had to start Minshew, if you had to start any of these guys, Brown got most of his yardage on like on a single play, but just a brutal performance from the Eagles offense overall. And a lot of it was on the quarterback.
Yeah. And for the Saints, their season's over. They head into another offseason where they'll have about a billion questions and no first round pick and no cap resources to figure them out. So we'll see how they climb themselves out of that hole as they always do.
Yeah. If I could just say on the Saints side, another pretty impressive game for Rashid Shaheed.
He can play. Let me tell you,
that guy's fast. Like, I don't even know that I've seen a 40 time on him, but whatever it is, it fully translates to game speed. That guy's a burner and he caught all six of his targets again, had a big play, has a big play every week. And I think early in the season, you just do this dumb thing where you try to find comps in your head for like players who used to be on that team. Right. I was thinking of him as like a Devery Henderson type or something like that, but he's probably more than that. He's probably a little better than that. He was good. This is a great game from him.
I think he has a chance to, I said this on another one of my shows, he has a chance to go down the like potential like John Brown, T.Y. Hilton axis of wide receivers. I think look, the people out there know I love John Brown. So for me to say that, that means a lot coming from me. Okay, let me just put it that way with the Rashid Shaheed thing. So yeah, no, he's a guy to definitely watch and track in the offseason. And, you know, they might not have to like full on remake the receiver position around Chris Olave because I think he can give them something there. Next game up, I could see it in Andy's eyes. He doesn't want to spend more than like 2 seconds talking about this game. Neither do I. Falcons 20. Cardinals 19. Andy, we got David Blau, you know, starting for the Cardinals here. What is there really to say on that their side except that James Conner gets hurt in this game, which of course James Conner got hurt in this game. They were playing him like 92% of the snaps,
yes,
which was, you know, absolutely absurd. And then obviously, but there are some long-term takeaways from the Falcons, but this game happened.
Yeah, this game did happen. Can confirm. Probably the best thing on the Cardinals side is Trey McBride showed up, 10 targets, found the end zone. Not a particularly impressive touchdown. It was a bit of a face plant of a touchdown. But even listening to the broadcast team, they made reference to David Blau really talking up Trey McBride earlier in the week. And he's a really talented young tight end. So to see him get 10 targets in this one, even though that required, you know, Hopkins out, Ertz out, everybody hurt, Moore out. It was nice to see him involved and nice to see what it can look like when he's involved. Tyler Algier was great. Cordarrelle Patterson was great again. He handled a pretty significant receiving workload. That was good to see. That's about all I have on this one. Desmond Ridder was fine in a game managey sort of way. But I don't know that we've really learned anything about Desmond Ridder yet.
Yeah, no, I don't think we have either. I think we've learned that the Falcons should probably think about fixing that quarterback position in the offseason if they'd like to take the next step as an offense. They certainly need more out of that. Tyler Algier, the fun, it is worth saying, just fun finish to the season for him. And again, maybe he's done enough for them to not spend like a third round pick on a running back and potentially ruin his, you know, we talked about that with Marvin on the preview show, Marvin Eloquent, and, you know, it's just the danger with these day three running backs. Like they can get usurped by somebody at any point. But I think he's done enough to potentially look like the starting back next year. But we shall see. Let's move on. Browns 24, Commanders 10. I mean, Carson Wentz. Come on. I mean, Why do we have to go? Like, I get it. I'm not here to cape for Heinicke, but you know, Ron Rivera is like, they're turning the ball. Like Heinicke's turning the ball over too much. Like, well, all right. So we're gonna go back to Carson Wentz, known protector of the football, Carson Wentz. And it definitely cost them the season. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care about, like, you know, the controversy of did Rivera know they could get eliminated? Number one, he knows if they win the game, they keep it moving. So that's what really matters. I don't care about that stuff really at all. But I do care about the fact that, like, I think this was the move for Carson Wentz from the beginning was fraught, obviously. And now his play in this game pretty much alone has cost them the what's left of their season. So that's a shame.
Yeah, the interceptions were miserable. He just had a brutal game. Like, weird scene during this game when Jonathan Allen got hurt and, like, the crowd is cheering for Heinicke to enter the game and the players are trying to silence the crowd, right? Like, just bad energy all around surrounding this team in basically all aspects. And yeah, Wentz was just an absolute disaster. Finishes off their season. They started Jonathan Williams in this game, by the way, at running back. I think he started. He definitely took the opening series. And then they leaned on Brian Robinson throughout, and he was pretty ineffective. There's literally nothing good I can say on the Washington side that came out of this game.
No,
I had talked myself into the idea that, you know, some targets and some touches, maybe some backfield touches, we're gonna head back toward Curtis Samuel. That didn't happen. He wasn't involved at all. Nobody got anything going. And Wentz was just an absolute train wreck at the worst possible moment. So they need a pretty full reset.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, it's just, God, it's rough. On the Cleveland side of it, yeah, I mean, it was nice to see, you know, Deshaun Watson definitely uncorked the ball a little bit to Amari Cooper, and I say it was nice to see on the Cooper side of it, because I still think that Cooper is sort of like a weird, misunderstood player. I actually think he's really good in yak situations. I think he's really good in the vertical game, so it was good to see Cooper shine in that moment here in this game, because I wasn't really expecting it. Good end of the season for Amari Cooper there, who's obviously a player that they can build around. But Cleveland obviously is, you know, is coming off a disappointing season. A lot of chaos there. We'll see what they do in the offseason. So let's move to the final game here. And I wanted to leave this game, Sunday Night Football, for the last part of it, because it is an ugly game for sure. 16 Steelers, 13 Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens are the definition of ugly right now, Andy. I mean, it's just... they're ugly, but I feel like, and we could save them for here for a second, because I want to talk about the Steelers, that, you know, they've somehow in this mess of a year, you know, a year with, what were they, like 2-6, 2-8 at one point? I mean, they looked like they were DOA, did the Pittsburgh Steelers. They still have a chance to make the postseason, 19% chance to make the postseason, according to 538. And I think if you squint at it, and honestly, I take it back. I don't even think you need to squint at it. I think if you just look at what Kenny Pickett's done the last two games in end-of-game situations, the way that Najee Harris, who looked like at one point he was going to be the worst pick in fantasy,
yes,
has sort of returned his season to normalcy. And they also have, like, a capable sidekick in Jaylen Warren. We know the receivers are good. I think if they change the offensive coordinator, and they have to get a different offensive coordinator in here. They can't have Kenny Pickett running this goofball offense another year. I think there's a lot of, like, reason to be optimistic for the future of the Pittsburgh Steelers right now.
Yeah. That it starts with what you just said, which is not having Matt Canada, like, attached to this team next year. Cause, like, you, on the one hand, you want to give Mike Tomlin a lot of credit for holding all this together and sort of guiding this. It's almost like a controlled crash landing of a season for that team all year. Yeah. But I mean, how do you not also put the OC, like, that goes on Mike Tomlin's account too.
And yeah,
this offense has just been a brutal watch. I, with reference to Najee Harris, we do have to remember that part of his story all season was that the foot injury in the preseason,
yep,
that obviously carried into the regular season. Right. And he's just visibly not been the same guy that he was last year. And I think a lot of that was playing through injury, which is, as we've discussed at various points, that gets a guy that guys earn a lot of credit within a locker room for that. And they take a lot of heat from fans and from fantasy players and from everyone else when they play through an injury and they are not at their, you know, normal capacity and not functioning as they normally would. So it's nice to see Najee finish the season really strong. I will note that it was another game in which George Pickens made a highlight catch and saw only four targets. I'm fully sick of that. Like, I don't understand why every catch that George Pickens makes has to be like a degree of difficulty. Oh my God, did you see that sort of play? Like, I would like to see an offensive coordinator come into this team and say, hey, let's get him some easy stuff too, and let's make sure that he is involved in every quarter of a football game instead of, you know, only periodically when we absolutely positively.
It'd be nice if he was running
yards,
you know, a normal amount of go routes instead of just like, I mean, it's both, it's him and Deontay Johnson both, like, it's just hitches and go routes, hitches and deep outs. Like, it's the, I've said it a lot. It's the worst designed offense in the NFL.
It truly
comfortably
is.
There are other bad offenses out there, but I'm talking about like what you walk into game day with, what you walk into Sunday or Thursday or Monday or whatever. It's the worst. It's the worst design and put together unit.
That's a good way to put it. It's like they come into games with a plan to get themselves to like 18 points if they max out, right? Like, there's just no.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like the way you frame it.
And Pickett deserves a lot. I think Pickett still could be better working in rhythm. I think he could still be better about certain parts of it, but like, you could criticize and poke holes and pick nits at every rookie quarterback, but what he's given them off schedule, off script, of course the offense comes alive when they get off the stupid script, right? Which, because the script sucks, so the improv acting is much better than whatever the writer's room has come up with here for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But yeah, I do think Mike Tomlin deserves an absurd amount of credit for getting this team, this group, into this moment. I think he's, look, Tomlin's obviously not perfect as a coach either. Nobody is, but he's certainly like, from a culture perspective and what he brings from a player development standpoint is really great to see. So I think it's a credit to the Steelers. And I mean, the Ravens, man, I do not care about this team. I barely care about this team if Lamar Jackson plays. I do not care about them if he is not on the field for them. Mark Andrews has 100 yards in this game. That was 77% of Tyler Huntley's total yardage. And J.K. Dobbins, the run game is good. Like, the run game, J.K. Dobbins played well. Gus Edwards didn't do much in this game, but he has played well for them. They're so far away from that, like, dusty crew of backs that was operating for this team, you know, like about a year ago. They've come a long way as a rushing attack, but they feel like they are lifetimes away from being a good passing offense. Did anybody out there, even like, I bleed purple and black like Ravens fan, did anybody believe that Tyler Huntley was going to like mount a drive there at the end of that game to get Justin Tucker in field goal range to tie it?
No, certainly not. They completed two passes to wide receivers. That is stunning that like, of Huntley's 130 passing yards, 100 went to Mark Andrews. That's pretty wild. That's so high school, right? Like, we have one dominant player. That's just not an NFL stat. That is pretty unbelievable. Yeah, one completion to DeSean Jackson, one completion to DeMarcus Robinson. That's it for the wide receivers on the day. Everything else was either Likely or Mark Andrews. Just not a legitimate offense. Two teams that are neither of them legitimate offenses right now. And I don't know how much better it can get with Lamar because they have so few weapons now.
Yeah, I just don't know what they're going to look like in the postseason. And the Lamar stuff is kind of weird. There's a lot of weirdness with the Ravens right now, but they have taken up too much of our time here. I have certainly taken up too much of Andy Barron's time while he's in sunny Florida. So, Andy, I appreciate you joining me here for the week 17. I'm wish casting week 17 recap podcast.
No, this is a blast. I don't usually get to do the recap podcast, but this is fun stuff.
Oh, I've said many times, and I'm going to I promise you, Andy, my promise to you, my New Year's resolution to you and to you alone is I'm going to figure something out next year where we don't just have you talking about the worst players in football every Monday morning. with the waiver recap. Okay, I've tried to tweak it middle of the year. Like, all right, I'm just gonna cram in every moderately relevant news story at the beginning of the waiver podcast, so that Andy doesn't have to spend a full 45 minutes just talking about here's why Richie James awesome game. Awesome call.
That was the name I was gonna reach for. Yep. All right, yeah. Let me give you 20 awesome minutes on Zach Moss,
by the way. But yeah. Here's why Deion Jackson will totally not be a complete disappointment to you. I promise you, Andy. I'll figure something out for next football season where that is not your primary job on this show, is to tell us why the worst players in football might be able to give you 10 PPR points.
I appreciate you, sir.
I appreciate you. And I appreciate everybody out there for listening. 600 episodes of the podcast. That's a lot. Feels like we've had 600 different iterations of the podcast throughout each of those 600 episodes, but I feel like we've got a pretty good thing going here right now. So I hope you all keep it rocking with us for the 2023 calendar year. As your fantasy season wraps up, though, don't go anywhere. Okay. This podcast is going to be doing a lot more than just mock drafting 500 times in the offseason. I can promise you that. But you do need to remember these important words. You don't have to get ready if you stay ready, and you need to stay ready for next year's fantasy drafts by following @AndyBarons on Twitter. You can also follow me @MattHarmon_BYB. And of course, if you're not following @YahooFantasy, what the hell are you doing with your life? We're going to put out episodes of the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast all season long, so make sure you have subscribed if you haven't already. And please rate and review the podcast on your favorite platform of choice. We read those. I normally read them, you know, crying alone with a bottle of wine at about 10 p.m. on a Wednesday. But so make sure they're nice and make sure they're 5-star reviews, baby. Please. We read those. We want your feedback. You can direct those all to me personally. If you have bad feedback, especially just direct it to me personally, and don't rate and review the podcast. Just completely forget you ever listened to this podcast. Come back tomorrow to find out how good Austin Eckler is feeling after a big win over the Rams on another episode of Eckler's Edge. Until then, we're out.